the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 332. I'm back. God, you know what? Holidays I find hard work. I do, really, because normally I think most people have a holiday from something they don't enjoy, like their job. I enjoy my job. I love doing this. So when I had to sit next to the pool doing nothing, reading a book, or doing anything, I knew the markets were open. I knew there's plenty of prices going up, reds, blues, greens. I knew volume was coming in. I knew information was coming in about companies. I find that hard to switch off. People say, oh, you have to switch off from time to time. No, I enjoy being switched on. Why be switched off if you don't enjoy it? I find it really hard work to sit there and do nothing. So I'm glad to be back. And thank you very much to everyone who said I'm missing the podcast on Twitter or on email. I really do appreciate that. And it's because most of you, a lot of you guys, have suggested companies I get on the podcast. Not only that, have actually contacted the companies on my behalf and managed to get them on the podcast. And I've got a few companies coming up this week. I've got Strat-Euro, Inspire Energy. I've got Northcote coming up. Who else? A couple of other companies coming up. Yes, off the top of my head, I can't remember. I've also got some traders coming up as well on the podcast this week, so that'll be entertaining. I've also got, of course, Magnolia Petroleum, but also on the podcast today, I have today's penny stock with potential. And also, this podcast is dedicated to Phil from Baz. Is that, where's that, Baz? Is that Basingstoke? I don't know. Basildon? Basildon, probably, isn't it? He gave me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. I'll read that out later. Joining me on the podcast right now is Steve Sneed, Chief Executive Officer of Magnolia Petroleum. Steve, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Now, it's nice you come on the podcast and have a chat about the company, and I'm sure there are many people out there, well, I know there are, that are invested in the company, because I've got some emails, questions from private investors invested in your company, but there are lots of people, you know, who may not have heard of you. So, Steve, if you can give us a broad outline as to what you do, any points of interest, and then we'll go into a bit more detail afterwards.
All right. I'll sure be happy to do that, Justin. We're a onshore U.S.-focused oil and gas company. We're asset-backed. And our strategy has been to identify the land in certain areas where we feel like there's a drilling activity and geologically prospective areas. We've been acquiring leases in those areas. In the U.S., the oil and gas business is different here than it is in any other country, because the mineral rights or the rights to the oil and gas are owned by usually a number of different people. So when oil companies, the larger ones like the Devons and Chesapeakes of the world, they'll go through and acquire leases, they'll clean up just enough to give them operatorship and then continue moving on. Whereas that gives us the opportunity to go in and buy some interest in those same areas. The people that are difficult to find or difficult to negotiate with, and we'll go in and buy leases, and then we're in the wells in which they will drill. Right now on our acreage, we have over 600 potential drilling locations. But what that's allowed us to do is participate with a small interest. Our average working interest is about 3% with a number of operators. So that today we have over 200 producing properties in the U.S., in North Dakota and Oklahoma. We drilled almost 50 wells last year. We drilled so far this year 26 new wells, or participated in the drilling of those wells. We have 11 wells that are currently drilling. We announced one new one this morning with Continental Resources. And we've elected, we have well proposals from operators on 30 additional wells that we've elected to participate in. There are a number of well proposals that we've received that we have decided not to participate in, because we are high grading these deals and choosing the ones we feel like have the best economics. But because of that strategy, it's allowed us, since we went on AIM at the beginning of 2012, to become cash generative. When we went on AIM, we had a net income gross income about $10,000 a month in revenues. Now we have about our average for the last 6 months, as we released in our interims, was $180,000 a month. And our barrels of production has gone from 7 BOEPD to about over 300 BOEPD. And so our reserve value has gone from $1.5 million to $21 million. So that strategy has been working for us during that period of time.
Yeah. And, you know, the current environment is not kind to oil and gas companies. I mean, how's that affecting your strategy there?
Well, our strategy basically has remained the same, is to continue to participate in only those projects that we feel like have the ability to take a dollar and turn it into $3. And we also feel like that we have been accepting fewer of those well proposals that we've received because we've really been high grading them ourselves. But also, right now is a better opportunity to drill than it has been in a number of ways. Drilling costs have come down dramatically. We can add reserves much cheaper than we could before. For example, a conventional well right in the U.S., conventional well drilling has come down by about 30%. And on the horizontal or unconventional wells that are being drilled, the horizontal, we've seen the AFEs on those or the well costs go down from about in half. Wells that were costing $3.2 to $3.8 million, we're now getting the companies are proposing those wells to us at $1.6 to $2.2 million.
Okay. All right. So you released an RNS today. Take us through that, Steve.
Well, we were only able to get a small percentage of interest in this area where Continental was drilling, but it does allow us to participate with them. It is a 0.5% interest, but it allows us to participate in these 10 wells, which Continental has proposed on us. This is a liquids-rich gas area, and there's really good economics on that right now. There's a lot of midstream companies, pipeline companies that are looking for gas in Oklahoma, also with the liquids-rich gas. It basically makes your effective price per MCF higher. So we felt like the economics were very good on these wells, even though they're very expensive wells to drill because they're 10,000-foot horizontals. But it will be it's going to be a nice addition to our bottom line once all six wells are drilled.
Yeah, and what's the goal of the target, Steve, over the years? I mean, have you got a figure you want to hit in barrels of oil per day or what?
Well, our strategy really has been, Justin, to grow the company as large as we could get it. We have seen that there is a breakover for assets at basically $100 million, and that was our first goal, was to get our assets to $100 million. We're on our way. We, of course, would have been there faster had the price not dropped to 40% of what it was. But be that as it may, we're still en route to that goal.
Okay. All right. Let's go to a couple of questions I've had submitted from private investors. Some of them are quite tough, Steve, so brace yourself, all right?
Yes, sir.
But if you can tackle the tough ones, you get a newfound respect, I find, from private investors. So here we go.
Well, let me say this, that yeah. My family and I are the largest stockholders in the company. I don't take a salary. All I do is I do get a small director's fee, but I don't take a salary for the work I do because my interests are totally aligned with these stockholders. So there's no tougher question that they could ask than I've asked myself. So go
okay,
ahead.
Okay, excellent. I like that. Okay, here's the first question. The initial business plan for Magnolia was to build up the company into a substantial business and then sell it under the present market conditions. Does the board of directors still consider this can be achieved within a reasonable time frame?
The answer to that is yes. And let me explain why. Every downturn in the oil and gas business, and this is my sixth one that I've lived through, I have bought or acquired as many assets as I possibly could during the downturn. You know, that's Warren Buffett's strategy. He said when no one wants it, that's when you should be buying it. When everyone wants it, that's when you should be selling it. And so we feel like now is a great opportunity to acquire additional assets, either through an acquisition or through drilling for it, and because we have so many great drilling locations. So either way, we feel like during the downturn, we can make some hay while the sun shines, so to speak, mm-hmm. and we will come out of this better than when we went into it, which is exactly where we've been every other time that this has happened to me in the past.
Yeah, do you have an opinion on the oil price at the moment? Do you see this as a bottoming out at the moment or not?
Well, there's I see a floor or a support for oil at this price, and how long it will last, I can't say. No one has a crystal ball in that regard, but I do think it's going to be a little bit longer, and we think that there'll be possibly some really good acquisition possibilities in the first quarter of 2016, which we'll be reviewing. We have good relationships with our banks, and they're willing to loan us money to acquire more of those assets. In fact, they've asked us to look at a couple of assets that they have that were not performing as well and see if we would be interested in taking those over, kind of a sweetheart deal. But we just didn't feel like it was right for Magnolia at the time. But we will be continuing to review deals and opportunities like that.
Okay. All right, here's the second question. My main concern is a director buyout at a super low share price followed by the sale of all rich properties at a considerable markup, thus little value for shareholders and max value for board of directors. Can the company put my mind at rest? Specifically, how will they deliver shareholder value to all investors when the company ends?
That's a good question. By not doing that. Basically, I think if there's a value that we're going to sell this company for, it's going to be something that I, as the biggest shareholder, would want. Yeah. And I know there has been some concern about it, this low value taking the company private, and don't think that hasn't crossed my mind. But by the same token, we feel an obligation to the shareholders. We feel a desire to build something, and we feel like that. There's no reason to do that at this moment. And if we sell it, it'll be sold for what an independent company values the company for, not anything that's any kind of a sweetheart deal.
Yeah. Okay, next question. Why don't you produce a quarterly report with current barrel of oil production rates that are more accurate and gives the market a better idea of how to value the company?
Well, first of all, let me say that barrels of oil equivalent per day in valuing the company is a very poor way to do it. The reserve-based value is the best way. The assets are the reserves in the ground and not the barrels of oil equivalent per day production. And that's why once every 6 months we have to hire a third-party independent engineering firm to generate that number for us and for our bank. And so it helps keep our costs lower when we don't have to generate that number every quarter. And also, it's really not necessary. The value is what those reserves are. Those reserves are the value of this company, not the BOEPD. Now, the BOEPD helps generate cash flow. Don't get me wrong. We want that. We want as much of it as we can get. But it's not an effective barometer for valuing the company.
Cool. Okay, two more left. Doing well there, Steve. If Magnolia sold reserves at a premium to the share price, would they issue an extraordinary dividend to reward shareholders?
Unless we found a better opportunity to spend the money that would make them three times as much as we got for the properties, then I think that would be what we would do, yes.
Cool. All right. And the last one, here's a tricky one here. If the company is doing as well as directors say it is, why has the share price been in decline for years?
I would like to know the answer to that question myself.
Yeah. Okay. So anyone know the answer to that, please. Answers on a postcard. Yeah.
Well, let me say this. When we went on AIM, we had $1.5 million in P1 reserve value and our stock price was 0.55 P. Mm-hmm. Now here we are 3 years later with $21 million in P1 reserve value and our stock price is 0.45 P. So now we do have a little bit of debt, but even at that, our stock price, based on our reserve and our assets, should be much bigger than it is. But that's for the market to say.
Yeah. So how do you feel, Steve, at the moment? Are you feeling quietly confident in the strategy going forward from now?
I do. I have built and seen companies built this way. And what we're doing is it's not a lot of pie in the sky. I mean, I'm not trying to promise investors 1,000 to 1 on their money and have a 100 to 1 chance of getting it. We're building value in a company slowly but surely, like taking the stairs, like a stair step going up to the next floor. And occasionally we'll find some things that will add some extraordinary value to the company. But in the meantime, we're just going to continue to build value.
Yeah, I like the fact that you hold, a large amount of shares yourself, because that's always a telling sign, I think. Okay, so here's your final thing. Three reasons, Steve. I'm not an investor in the company. I don't hold shares in Magnolia, but I'm an active investor. So give me three reasons why I should invest in Magnolia.
Well, number one is we are cash generative, so we're going to be around. Number two is buy low and sell high. So if you think the price is low, which I do, then I think, that's the number one reason to buy something. You buy it when it's low, you sell it when it's high. And I think the third reason is because ever since we've come on AIM, we've done what we said we would do. And that's build value in the company, take the money over and above what we spent, what the bare minimum that are required to keep the company operating, and reinvest it in properties that would generate more production. And we are going to continue to do that. And if you can't buy into a company that the management does what it says it will do, then you shouldn't.
Yeah, and I think it's quite hard at the moment for any small or junior minor oil and gas company, because, like I said, it's the unknown force, or the factor that the oil price has collapsed. You know, it does take every, it's taken the whole sector down pretty much, hasn't it? So, you know, even though people are like invested in your company and they'll point the finger at you, it's happened to pretty much all oil and gas producers. So it's not your personal fault, is it, essentially?
Well, you know, I'm not going to say that I've made a perfect record of making decisions, but we've made good decisions over the time period. When you can build something from $1.5 million to $21 million in 3 years, that's decent decisions. And what I will say is that, yeah, the sector has hurt us, and I don't think the market understands the value of these non-operated working interests that we own. And I think that's one of the things that's really hurt us. Everyone's like, well, you don't have control. No, but we don't have the overhead either of having. And the other thing is that the key to eliminating risk is diversification. Would you rather have a 3% interest in 100 wells or 100% interest in 3 wells? Well, my philosophy has been you're better off having a 3% interest in 100 wells, because you've diversified, you've limited your risk. And that's what I have really been all about from day one, is limited risk, because I'm investing my dollars alongside the shareholders' dollars.
Yeah. And so, Steve, if the oil price stays what it is or stabilizes for a bit now, next few months, and, you know, it doesn't go any lower, for example, ideally, you know, what's your ambition for the size of the company, market cap-wise? I mean, it's $5 million pretty much at the moment. Where would you like to see it in the next, say, a year from now?
Well, I'd like to see it at 100 million pounds.
Yeah. But,
realistically, if the price went back to $100 a barrel, we would realistically like to see it at 50 million pounds. But we're probably not going to get $100 a barrel, but what we will get is something that we think will be close to that.
Nice. Steve, have you got anything else to share? I think you've done a good job there selling yourself and the company. But if there's anything else you'd like to share, let me know.
I'd just like to thank the shareholders for their confidence in us. And I realize that it's a difficult thing to invest for the long term. But I've always been of the adage that you have a short-term pain for long-term gain. And that's the way I feel about Magnolia, is that we're not going to blow up to 5P tomorrow, but we are going to be a company that's going to continue to build value for the dollar that they have invested in us.
Lovely to chat to you, Steve. And come back on when you've got some more news. Come back on, please do.
All right, Justin. Thank you very much for having us.
Okay, it's time for the Penny Stock with Potential. It's suggested by Nick, the Pest Pester. Nick is probably coming on the podcast very soon, hopefully, because he's doing very well at trading and investing, and he's more than doubled his money since he's been doing it, and so he's coming on very soon. So pay attention to this suggestion, his penny stock. It's Box Hill Technologies, BOX is the ticker. Box is the ticker. What does the company do? Casino and lottery service provider. Would you say this is a short, medium, or long-term investment? Medium. Brackets, expect sales of 80 million in 2 years. How many shares does the company have in issue? A medium amount. Thanks, Nick. I've done the research, don't worry. 1.455 million, so 1.4 billion, basically. What's the current price and market cap of the company? It's 0.33 pence and valued at 4.8 million market cap. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, great operating leverage. Number two, no need to raise cash as churns cash. And three, other non-core assets provide upside. So it's Box Hill Technology, suggested by Nick there. And check, they are on my watch list. Generally, I try and keep companies who have shares less than a billion in issue. That's just over that, but it's not excessive, you know. So they are on my price alert watch list, and I suggest you get yourself a price alert watch list, because it's very handy. To a certain extent, it takes the emotion out of investing, because you just sit and wait for a company to hit a price that you've put there on a support level, and then you start doing some research. Simple as that. It doesn't always work, of course, because we are emotional beings. That's our downfall. Okay, this podcast is dedicated to the one, the only Phil from Baz. who gave me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. This is what Baz says. Phil from Baz, this is. Sorry, did I say Baz? No, Baz from Phil. No, it's not Baz from Phil, it's Phil from Baz. Thanks, Phil from Baz. Really like the overall presentation and friendly chat whilst getting real information on companies. Would be good to get Justin to check out companies that people would like to invest in. What am I doing then? So, oh, do you mean bigger companies, like dividend payers? I know, do you know what? I've edged down the market cap spectrum because penny stocks are more exciting. You have to do your research and know about them. But I think you can earn a lot more money in a short space of time, as long as you're careful and you're not, you know, crazy with your money. But anyway, Phil says, perhaps even a 10-minute section every podcast on identifying how to analyse companies, etc. Just a thought. Well, we sort of do this on the weekend. I don't know if you listen to the weekend podcast, Phil, but I have Pete and Steve on, different levels of experience of investing, and hopefully they ask me questions that I try and answer. If I can't answer it, then I'll just Google it, basically. But essentially, when you're looking at a company, think in terms of cash, the acronym CASH. C stands for cash. You know, look at the cash flow. Does the company have cash? A is assets. What is the assets of the company? What are they selling? What are they doing there? S is for shares. So look at shares in issue. Look at the ownership of the shares. Look at the share price on a chart. And H is for the head honcho. All right, so look at the management. Have they got good track records? What have they done previously? You know, that's, and I think if you look at those four aspects in any company, and they tick all four boxes, I think you'll do very well. Anyway, Phil, thank you very much for you know, giving me I now am over 100 five-star ratings and reviews on iTunes, and it's much less appreciated. So, Phil, thank you very much for doing that. I do appreciate that. And by all means, if you want a dedication on the podcast, just go to iTunes there, give me a review, or go to sharepickers.com, actually, my website. Click the link there and you can suggest a penny stock with potential or give me a review. It's up to you, and I will feature you on the next podcast. Don't forget, please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation of this podcast. It's only just opinion. Please do your own research. God, it's nice to be back. Do you know, even though I was in Cape Verde last week, you know, 28 to 30 degrees, really hot, sitting by the pool, drinking nice drinks, I miss this rainy weather. I miss the markets, and most of all, I miss you. Yes, don't look around. I'm talking about you. No, not you. Not you. Yeah, you. That's it. You.
The ADBFN podcast with Justin Waite.